This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the butt, blood judgment. My own sweet down to the T24. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Told, speaks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a professional touring rock and roll band. This is episode 103. Every time I say these numbers, like ever since I've hit 100, it kind of blows my mind that I've done this many of them, but I'm having such a blast. And very special episode today. One of the most requested guests, been trying to get him on the podcast for pretty much 2 years now. Dustin of Thrice is here. Such a great talk, such an interesting guy. A lot of different dynamics going on with obviously Thrice, and their amazing career they've had, his solo stuff, you know, his life as a Christian. It really has been very interesting. So I was looking forward so much to having Dustin on, and the day has finally come. Before we get into that, shout out to all my sinners worldwide, everybody that's in the All Access Club. That is how you can help out this show. If you're interested in helping us grow, helping us keep the lights on, check out the All Access Club. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And for as little as $6 a month, you can join. You get a bunch of bonus content, free stuff, interaction with me, interaction with other guests of the show, etc., etc. So check that link out, please, because that is what keeps this thing going. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Last week with Josh Todd of Buck Cherry was a good time. Thank you, everyone that tuned in. If you loved the episode, please go on iTunes, write a review. If you didn't like it, we have the hate line option. You can give me a call. You can leave me a message. And I did roll out a clip last week of Brendan Potter of New Braunfels, Texas, you know, giving me some hate. I love it. So I do roll out these clips. So if you want to leave me some hate, it's real simple. Pick up your phone and dial 657-666-HATE. Again, that's 657-666-HATE. H-A-T-E. Leave a message, and I do roll up clips now. This is a thing, so give it to me. But I do sincerely hope that you enjoy this episode and past episodes. Again, I've done 103 of these things. There's back episodes you can listen to. And really, I mean, this is kind of my thing these days. I spend a lot of time booking guests for the show, editing this thing. You know, I do almost everything that this podcast is completely by myself. So thank you guys so much. I hope you like it. And if you do, check out the All Access Club. And if you can't afford it, I understand. I mean, it really is only the price of like one fancy coffee a month or like, you know, even like two kind of crappy coffees. But, you know, whatever. If you can't afford it, I understand. All I ask is if you dig the show, tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing going. And I am loving it. So thank you so much for being a part of it. Anyways, hey, let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with Dustin Kensrew of Thrice. Yo, Dustin, what's up, man?
Hey, doing all right? Sorry I spaced.
No, you know, it happens all the time. I always give people a little heads up. I was going to tell you, like, I don't know. I would have told you earlier, but I kind of spaced too, to be honest with you. So here we are, couple space cadets. So are you in Texas?
I am. I'm in El Paso Day Off.
El Paso Day Off. That's classic. Yeah. I have. I'm on tour right now, too. I'm in Thunder Bay.
Sweet.
Which is another classic, like, tour day off. Like, you never really play there, but you spend, like, so much time there, you know it, like, better than cities you play. It's, like, the weirdest thing.
Yeah, we played there once, I think, but we haven't been through, like, Canada and that kind of area that much, surprisingly.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, El Paso is, like, yeah, I mean, you guys are just stopping in. You guys ever play there?
I don't know if we ever have. Maybe once.
That's crazy.
No, usually it's the day off.
It's actually pretty decent. We played. I was surprised. We played this little place called like Tricky Falls or something. That was like an 800 cap. It was like pretty good show. So
that's cool.
Well, man, it's so good to have you. Believe it or not, you are definitely one of the most requested guests for the show.
Honored.
I've been trying to get nail you down for a while. So it's really good to have you and. Yeah, man. So what's new? What's up? How are things, in the life of Dustin Kensrew?
Good, man. We're the last tour on this cycle, and we're writing a new record right now. So that's always fun and stressful. And trying to keep on a timeline so it doesn't just drag out into eternity. But it should be out next summer, late summer, maybe.
Okay, cool. So you're working on it right now. That's great. You guys have had, you say, oh, we're at the end of the cycle. I've never felt like, Thrice has been the kind of band that goes through like a normal kind of record cycle. You know what I mean? Because you have all your records are so radically different. You know, there was a while when you were putting out EPs. There was a while where you took a hiatus. For you to just kind of nonchalantly be like, yeah, we're at the end of our cycle. It's kind of, interesting to me to hear you say that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we did the Alchemy Index stuff, which was EPs, but was released kind of as, two full links connected, almost like Radiohead did with Kid A and Amnesiac.
Right.
So that was kind of a combined weird touring cycle through all that, but other than that, I feel like we've had pretty normal ones. I feel like our rhythm is about, aside from hiatus and other weird projects, it's been about, 2 years between putting out records. I don't know.
Totally.
It's hard to make a living selling records, so you can't go too long if you're kind of work in band to between things, but you got to space out enough to where you can actually go back to the cities you just played. So it's a balance.
It is a balance. No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I guess my statement really is just Thrice is you are the kings of, you know, not doing things the conventional way. And I like that. I've always admired that about your band. Not just some of the stylistic changes you've, you know, employed over the years, but even just the idea of, hey, we're going to make a record like this. We're going to do this, or I'm going to start, you know, putting out solo records and Christmas records and all this stuff. Is it really just come down to doing like change because you don't want to stay in the same place too long? Or is it like you said, I mean, you know, you got to make ends meet, you know, you're a family man.
I think it's a combination of all the things. I mean, us as like a band, you know, all fall in different places on, you know, a bunch of different spectrums, I guess, but we all do really value doing things the way that we want to do them. And it's something you kind of have to figure out how to put your foot down as you're going along and, you know, not just be super stubborn and, you know, not work with any of the people who are trying to help you in your band. But at the same time, you know, you've got to say no to certain things. You've got to push for other things that you want other people to say yes to. And so I mean, Alchemy Index is a good example of that, which is, you know, like, hey, we want to do this 24 song, 4 disc thing. And the funny thing about that was, I think Island at the time, we were on Island, but most of our crew had kind of left from there at that point. And I think they were just hoping that in 24 songs, there'd be, you know, a hit in there somewhere, you know? And yeah. So once we delivered it, they're like, oh yeah, we don't really want to put this out. We're like, yeah, we don't really want you to, but so they got to save half the advance and we got to keep our records. So
that's the story there.
It was a good exchange. I mean, we worked really hard on it, made ourselves and all that. So, and it's we're repressing it right now. It should be done any day. So we're excited about that. It's 10-year anniversary.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I mean, let's start there. I mean, that's something I really want to ask you about. I mean, I remember Thrice as, you know, a band on Hopeless, Sub City, a punk band, you know, a lot of roots to kind of what Hopeless Records used to put out, which was, you know, skate punk records. And you you guys kind of fit into that a little bit. And then obviously your music has changed so much in over the years that it doesn't anymore. But the success you picked up over the first two records, then signing to Island Records, was, to me, it seemed like very strange that took place. Was it strange to you too that a label like Island wanted to pick up your band?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird time. It was kind of the beginning of this second wave of indie bands getting picked up. You know, the first kind of being with, you know, Nirvana, Green Day, stuff like that. And right. Then, or at least this is how I see it, I don't know. But yeah, so we put out Illusion, Safety, and on that, I think that was the Plea for Peace tour? I can't even remember. I don't know, we were out on tour early on, and the record had just come out, and we had people flying out from all these different labels to try to sign us. It was super surreal and weird. So we just approached it like, okay, we don't have to do this. We're fine right now, but we can do this if it makes sense to us. So we just met with everyone, and at the time, the team at Island was cool, and everyone really seemed to have an understanding of, like, this is a career rock band. They're not, you know, their deal is not going to be trying to crank out radio hits for us. They're just going to do their thing, and we're into that. And then, yeah, once the leadership changes and labels so often these days that it's hard to keep track of, but eventually it was a totally different team there.
Well, totally. And I mean, I guess Artist of the Ambulance came out in what, 2003, I think. And, you know, that was kind of the peak of when records were really selling. You know, and then 3-4 years after that was when things started to hit a wall and decline altogether. So that was the nature of it. But with, you know, the other thing was interesting too that happened back then, and I don't know if people think about it or talk about it anymore, but you guys had a very interesting kinship with Thursday because you guys were signed at the same time, and it was almost like, and I almost think that the names being both with TH, there was this weird like thing where you guys were grouped together, lumped together at these major labels signing bands, but really you're both on Island. And it was like the weirdest thing because I was like, well, why are people using these bands interchangeably when they're really different bands?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was a, it was, I think it really showed itself in the Thrice Thursday thing, but it was frustrating on a larger front too, or just being like, hey, here's all these screamo bands. And it's like, what the hell is that? None of these bands sound the same.
Right.
But it was just a way of kind of branding the majors trying to, like, you know, make this movement something they could market. And so it was like, yeah, we all came out of the same scene, which is rad. Like, we came from these roots and we were all doing our own things with it. But that was, you know, largely ignored on a larger level. And that was the whole thing with Thursday. It was super frustrating because we were friends with them and we were going to do that tour, and it just there was so many complications surrounding it because Island was kind of forcing our hands to do it, and it was making it hard to, you know, negotiate how everything worked out. So it was, I mean, it was a rough tour in a lot of ways, and you know, we worked through all that with them and are still buds, but it was just a weird time.
No, totally. But I mean, that was the start of when you guys started, you know, pulling away from your early sound, you know, this sort of skate punk thing. Was there a talk with Island when you're making songs, like, okay, you know, like you mentioned with Alchemy Index, all right, 24 songs, like, you know, there's got to be a hit in there somewhere. Was that something that Island was trying to do? Were they trying to get you to write songs for the radio, like, creatively? Did they have control, or were they like, no, like, you guys can kind of do whatever you want. We just want to, like, we believe in you guys.
They were pretty rad about stuff, especially at that point. Our A&R guy, Rob Stevenson, was, he would give input and, you know, say, oh, I really like this song or whatever. But there was never any, like, hey, like, no, this is not right. You got to go back and whatever. And actually, this, I remember for BC, the song that he really liked ended up not even being on the record because it was, we tried so many times to remake it and to get everyone on the same page about it, and it just got worse and worse. So sometimes you end up kicking a dead horse, and
yeah,
sometimes you kick it and it jumps up and you're like, oh, I thought that thing was dead, and then now it's a song. So we've had that with, like, I think Words in the Water was one of those where it went through so many changes, and then all of a sudden there it was like the last thing done on that record. But
yeah, it's funny how that happens, and it's funny how sometimes a song, you know, when you're writing a song, you can start a certain way and you can make all these changes, and then all of a sudden you'll just be like, wait a second, it was best just the way we wrote it initially. You know, like how these songs can revert to the beginning. That's like one of my favorite things about songwriting. It's like you can, you know, you second guess yourself so many times that the initial thing is the best.
Yeah, and it's hard when you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen too to figure any of that out.
Is that what, would you say Thrice has a lot of cooks in the kitchen in terms of creatively?
Yeah. And, you know, that's what makes it super hard at times and also really rewarding and fun, and I think is what makes our band unique and sound like us. So we definitely all are very involved in the writing process. I end up writing, you know, most of the melodies and lyrics, but creatively it's very much a democracy, so a lot of push and pull, and
No, it's is that part of why, you know, you decided to go off and do some solo records? I mean, you've done a lot of them now. The first one came out in what, I think 2007, so it's been 10 years of you know, solo Dustin. What was the decision to start doing that, and have you found that very rewarding? I mean, obviously you keep doing it, I mean, it's a lot different, yeah. I guess, for you than Thrice.
I like the aspects of, you know, working on my own a bit. Like, it's a more streamlined process, and it flows a bit better, you know? It is weird not having that feedback. I ended up bouncing a lot of stuff off my wife on the last proper solo record, Carry the Fire, and that was fun. Just having, she's not musical, but she has a really good ear for,
oh yeah,
you know, what's good and what's not, and so she was able to push me on some stuff and make the record a lot better. But I like, yeah, and I like the aspect of performing solo. Acoustic is always really fun. It's a totally different animal, and I can control the dynamics myself and, you know, take it really quiet and get real loud, and I don't know, it's a much subtler art, I think, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny, bouncing off, you know, ideas, song ideas off of loved ones like that. One thing that I used to do, and I guess I still do it from time to time, is, so I'll play, you know, a friend or a loved one or someone, like a song that I wrote, and I'll be like, oh yeah, okay, and then I'll play another song and I'll play a cover, but I won't tell them it's a cover, and then I'll see if they like my song more than the cover song, but inevitably they always like the cover song more, and I'm like, fuck, like, why can't, you know, it's like, damn it, how did they know, how, like, you know, it's a funny thing like that.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, but it is amazing sometimes how when you bounce a musical idea off of a, you know, a person that's not a musician, how sometimes they can see something in it that a musician wouldn't have seen. You know, either something good about it or something, you know, bad about it.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, music is universal in a lot of ways and should be, you know, speaking to people who are not, you know, makers of music, but just enjoyers of it.
Yeah, definitely, man. So back to Island Records. You know, you put out Artist in the Ambulance, great record. Everyone loves it. You're at the top of your game. I'm sure Island Records was probably pretty happy at that point with what you guys were doing. And then came Visu. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Like,
it was a terrible, terrible idea to name. Don't ever name your band or your record something that people aren't sure how to say.
Yeah, well, my band's called Silverstein or Silverstein.
Like, that's not as bad, though. No. It's still, like, recognizable. Like, Visu is a bad one. Because, I mean, we don't even know the proper way to say it. It's from a book, so.
Yeah, well, I've been saying it the same way for, well, since the record came out, literally, and hopefully I'm saying it right. But that record, definitely was a departure. I mean, I think it's probably my favorite of all your records. I really like it, but it's got a lot more experimental side to it. What did the label think of that record? And also, what did your fans think of that record? Because you guys took a big chance, I think, at that time. I don't know if you knew you were taking a chance or if it's just what you had to do.
It was kind of like, we felt rushed on Artist in the Ambulance, and we decided we're not doing that again. We're not having some external thing making us have to rush through this, which I think we've gone back on a little bit, but it's been more on our terms. You know, we had set up this tour super far out on that one. It was like, it felt like we weren't able to make it the exact way we wanted it. We had to hurry. And I think it's a good record, but we didn't want it to feel that way again. So we just set out to be like, this thing's going to be done our way. We're going to have all the time on it. And yeah, that's just kind of what started the whole process of it. But we, you know, we looked for a producer that was from outside of our kind of, you know, where we'd come from. We had someone from a totally different perspective. So we got Steve Osborne, who had done like stuff with like Peter Gabriel and a bunch of like British kind of indie pop bands, and so that was cool just to have someone totally outside our world to bounce things off of, and did it up in Bearsville and took our time on it. It was a really cool recording experience. I like everything about the record except the vocals. I feel like that's the last record where I really don't like the vocals on it.
What do you mean? What do you mean exactly?
So I used to be really uncomfortable recording vocals in the sense that I didn't know that I was uncomfortable in a sense. I was just, but it was like, okay, we're going to get this, get the notes right, and we'll move on. And I didn't feel like free to really sing the way I wanted to, or to sing in a more emotive way or a natural way. And a lot of that probably had to do with, you know, just experience and time. But if you listen to the vocals between Visu and Alchemy, I think there's a gigantic jump. And it's because I recorded Alchemy with our guitarist Tepe running the board. So I just felt comfortable with him. There was no pressure. We had time. And so I was like, let me try it this way. And from then on, you know, it's been different working with different people, but it's always been better than it was before. Just having figured it out once, you know, I could kind of get back to that place a little easier.
That's an interesting thing to talk about. And I mean, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, so obviously this, it's a thing we can talk about very easily on this show. And there is it isn't talked about how much of the time a band gets in the studio and the producer isn't really producing a song or a feeling or okay, this lyric is this, so it has to have this expression. And like, what is this song all about? It's like, okay, well, is the note in pitch or not? Is the note in pitch? Yeah. Okay, next note. Next line. Okay, line sounds good. Next line. It becomes a very mechanical way to make music, which is not, music should not be mechanical.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, missing the job of being a producer, at least in that sense. But I mean, it's something that I think Eric Palmquist did really well on To Be Everywhere, To Be Nowhere.
Yeah.
Every aspect of that is, you know, it's like, what are you singing about here? What's this supposed to be doing? And so he's, I mean, a great producer is really producing an interaction and an experience with the musicians as much as anything else, trying to get the best work out of them, which is hard to do in this somewhat arbitrary environment, you know. It's so much different than performing live. And
it is.
I think for us, it's been hard to capture the way that we feel and sound live on a record.
Right. Well, I feel like it must be both ways. I mean, you know, some of the things you've done in the studio are amazing too, and that's not easy to capture live, you know? So I feel like there's a push and pull with you guys, you know? Is that a challenge?
I mean, it depends on what's going on. Like, we've done, you know, like after Alchemy, we did Beggars, which is super stripped down. And after we went to that, we kind of like just bailed on taking anything besides like our main instruments on the road for a while. And we're kind of just coming around from that to where I think the next record will have a lot more keys, right, and extra layers and stuff that we figure out ways to do live. But also live is its own deal, you know. It's, you know, I saw Radiohead recently and on the last record, and they, you know, there's no strings there at all, and they that first song, I forgot what it's called, on that record, it's like all strings, and they played it and it was still rad. Like, oh, okay,
right,
that was cool. Like, it's different, but that's okay.
No, exactly, it is okay. I mean, your band been around a long time, a lot of stylistic changes, but you have an amazing ability to keep your fans kind of right there with you. And, you know, your diehard fans love Illusion of Safety and Visu and the new record all the same. Does that surprise you that you guys are able to kind of wear so many hats and make so many changes over a long career and just, you know, have your fans just doesn't like support you almost no matter what unconditionally?
I think it's, the way I look at it is it's kind of a relationship that's built. And, you know, relationships built on trust, which is, you know, authenticity, essentially. And that comes through your music, whatever it's going to be. And so I feel like we built that relationship, and people, like, it's a two-way thing. And we've continued to make music that we are really excited about and not that we think someone else wants to hear or the radio wants to hear or whatever.
Yeah.
And in turn, I think fans have been willing to give each record a fair shake. And I mean, I know as much as anyone that a lot of times you hear the next record of your favorite band and you're like, what on earth is going on here? This is horrible, whatever. And you give it a second and it, you'll catch up, you know, with wherever they're at. And so I've had that with a ton of different bands, but I think people have been gracious enough to do that with us. And the more times that you kind of fulfill on that, the greater that trust is.
No, definitely. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I wonder, because to relate it back to myself and what we've done with Silverstein is I think we've always played things in a way relatively safe until recently, and our last couple of records we've taken more chances, and actually it's been more rewarding. And that, you know, and it's interesting because I think, you know, sometimes you don't give your fans enough credit for, you know, having the ability to, you know, process and think and make sense of what you're doing. And with you guys, it seems like you guys give your fans a lot of credit that they're going to understand what you're doing.
Yeah, that trust totally goes both ways. So, you know, you're kind of putting yourself out there and hoping that people catch you.
Totally. So with the hiatus in 2012, and I saw you guys play in Toronto, you know, on your farewell tour, wasn't your farewell tour after all. What was going on there, you know, in your life, in the band's life? Why did you think that was the end? And now, you know, why did you decide to come back?
Yeah, that was another failure in branding.
A failure of what, sorry?
Branding, because we were trying to be so clear that it was just a hiatus, you know, but then we called it the farewell tour, which seems more final than I think we meant it to
sound. Okay.
Because was our intention to be done. It was just to take a break. But yeah, saying farewell sounds too final. Should have been like bye for now or something. Then we could have covered that Lagwagon song. It would have been dope. So at the time, I mean, there's a lot of different factors, but I mean, to sum it up, we'd just been doing it 14 years straight with no break, and some of us had, you know, young kids and more on the way, and were interested in, you know, pursuing other things, and it just felt like it was time. I mean, it was all sorts of crazy stuff was happening too. Everyone's parents were dying of cancer, and like it just,
oh, geez.
It was a nutty time. So. So there's a lot of factors, but for me, like especially touring all the time was getting to be really rough the way we were doing it and with where my family was at.
No, totally.
The upside is, there's a lot of science coming out now that really supports this idea, but taking a break from anything is kind of the healthiest thing you can do to go back to it. So it's been really healthy for us coming back and feeling re-energized and refreshed.
Yeah, and it seems like your fans, you know, there's always that thing, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone. And I feel like your hiatus was really good for your career. You know, and I don't know, I mean, obviously every time I saw you guys play, it was a packed house and you guys always did very well. But it seems like now, you know, you guys are doing better than you've ever done. And I just wonder how much of the bad branding and, you know, the hiatus and stuff that you talk about, farewell tour, how much of that contributed to it? And if you've ever, you know, considered that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I think that refresh kind of thing works, you know, on the fan level too. Like you get used to something being there and then it's gone. And then it's back and you're excited about it. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I think that last record is one of the stronger things we've done. So coming back with something that I think is strong is really helpful. And I don't know, I mean, you can't make that happen. You just do your best. But the response to it has been probably the best response to anything that we put out, like, in the beginning.
Isn't that a great feeling?
That worked for it. It's awesome. And then I think some of it is the break, for some reason, like, allowed a reset in the larger consciousness about the band or something. Part of it has to do, too, with, I think, we passed the 15-year mark and all of that, which I've started to notice that anyone who does something for that long, it doesn't even matter if you're, like, not into it. Like, there's a certain level of respect and cred that, like, cements there. But, like, all right, that's legit. Like, you know, they're still doing it. That's rad. So all those things combining, I think we got a fair shake from new ears kind of hearing it too. And we got some radio play at Active Rock, which it's probably better than any showing we'd had there with a song that we had like zero clue would be anything but just an album kind of track. But we liked it, but we were like, yeah, this is a cool song, but didn't have any idea it would be a single. So
yeah, it's funny how that stuff happens, right? When you send like even with Silverstein, like, you know, radio's never a focus, but I mean, you know, if they want to play it, sure, great. And I always think it's funny how you'll have this list of, okay, like, we think these are the songs that should be, like, you know, the singles, or should be the songs for, we should make videos for, or whatever the fuck you're supposed to do. And then it's amazing how when you get, like, another, like, the label's input or someone else's input, how different it can be of what other people think. You know, oh, this is the song. No, this is the song.
Yeah, it's super surprising and strange.
It is strange, but it must feel so good to be making the best music you've made, you know, you've made in Thrice's career, like, whatever it is, 19 years in, whenever you started. I mean, longer maybe. You guys been a band for 20 years yet?
Next year.
Ah. Yeah. You got plans for the 20 year?
Put a new record out.
Well, you guys have kind of avoided, you know, the whole 10-year tour thing, right? I mean, you guys have found a way.
Yeah, we've never done it. Doing like a 4-song Alchemyantic suite on this tour, but that's pretty minor. We are repressing the vinyl, which was supposed to coincide with the tour, but is lagging, unfortunately. But
we talked about
doing the vinyl for years, and they were just, Vigrant was not wanting to do it, I think, just because it's a pain in the ass. Like, it's such an involved project. It's like a book with the sleeves and all that. So
you guys just don't have any interest in doing, you know, like a 15-year Artist in the Ambulance tour or anything like that? Like, you just have no interest? Is that why you've avoided it?
We it happens enough that we've talked about it, but it's just never really, I don't know, never been something we wanted to really pursue. I mean, it might happen at some point. I don't know.
Cool. And what about your soul stuff? What's up? What's coming up with that? Is that still something you're going to work on just as hard, or is it going to take a bit of a backseat?
Well, it's got to wait until this record's done. But the next thing I'm going to work on is probably a project that I've already been working on with my brother. That'll be different than my solo stuff. So I'm excited about that. And eventually I'll do another kind of more Americana record on my own too.
Oh, cool. Very cool. So as I was saying earlier, you know, you being one of the most requested guests, I have a ton of fan questions here. I have like so many, it's crazy. I don't even know what I'm going to do, but do you mind answering a couple?
Sure. Yeah.
You have some like crazy super fans here. Brandon Ray asks, how did your voice change so drastically from Artist in the Ambulance to Visu? Was it vocal lessons, natural vocal maturity? He writes, AKA balls dropped, LOL. Or did he just change his vocal style because he was more comfortable? It's interesting because you said that was the last record you didn't like on Visu. So.
Well, I think, I mean, if you listen to, like, if you go listen to really early stuff, yeah, like, definitely sounds like my balls must be higher or something at that point. But there's natural progression of time, experience, whatever. I haven't thought about the difference between those two records, but I'd imagine that's a decent jump too. It's just, I'm not happy listening to the vocals on anything before Alchemy.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, there's nothing between there that I did. I've only had two vocal lessons ever, and they were with two different, like, you know, the guys who everyone goes to. And
who were they with?
It wasn't my thing. I can't remember. One guy's in LA and one guy's in New York, and they're like rivals, and they have very different approaches to things. But it's never really my deal. I just kind of wanted to sing the way I wanted to sing, which is kind of how I approach guitar too. I had lessons when I was young, and I never practiced. So,
because you hate those vocals on those records so much, have you ever thought about doing some re-records? Because I'm sure you guys would be allowed contractually after this long.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, you always think about that stuff, but then you, at least for me, I try to keep in mind the terrible things that George Lucas has done to Star Wars, and be like, maybe it was okay to just leave it, you know, like, it is what it is. You know, there's so many, like, lame things about the original Star Wars, but, like, when you go back and try to mess with it, it gets worse. Like,
yeah.
Those lame things become endearing over time, but when you try to go in and mess with it, it just feels false. I don't know. I've thought about doing some kind of like greatest hits type record, but actually re-recording songs, which I think could be more interesting. Just a totally new take. And there's songs that we still play, you know, that are super old, that the recording to me has not aged well, but the song itself is solid, you know.
Definitely.
So I mean, we play Silhouette almost every show, and that song on record is pretty lame in my opinion at this point. I mean, I know it's the thing that everyone's connected with, but like live it's a totally different beast. It's just it's really stiff feeling on the record, and that's something that happens with a lot of our songs, is there's a, at least in the older ones, there's a stiffness the way they're tracked, and then they really loosen up and get limber over time. So I don't know. I've never brought that idea up with anyone, but
that's interesting. There's another fan question here that asks if you've ever thought about redoing older songs for an album, like how you redid So Strange I Remember You and the ending for Deadbolt for your live show. Another example is a song for Millie Michelson live. So somebody else has thought about this too.
All right. Yeah, we'll see about that. I don't know. There's never enough time to do the things you think about doing, though.
Well, that's right, right? If you could do everything you thought of, I mean, geez, imagine. Another fan question.
So I guess that one really wouldn't be that hard. Like songs that you've gotten good at playing live over time.
That's true.
Retrack him.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it would be
fun.
The
problem is a lot of the ones I'd want to put on there are like newer anyway, so it wouldn't make that much sense.
Just remix it or something.
You'd have to do like the first 10 years or something and then just do songs off that.
Yeah, that's a good idea, man. Another question here from Brandon Ray. When Thrice Took Hiatus broke up in 2012, did it have anything to do with his involvement with the Mars Hill Church? And did that church's demise influence the rebirth of Thrice?
Yes and yes. It definitely had something to do with, well, I wouldn't say it was like causal in terms of the hiatus, but I ended up becoming more involved in it than I could have while doing Thrice. And yeah, like getting that whole mess was basically I was an elder there at the end and was with a group of elders trying to fix a really toxic culture that the leadership just refused to let be fixed or worked on. So it all fell apart and it needed to die, and it died, and that was good. So it was a brutal, weird time, but what I learned coming out of it was that, you know, while I could do other things, I really missed creating
music
as much as I get to in Thrice, and that I feel like that's kind of what I'm wired to do, what I'm really good at, and so was really excited to get back to it.
Totally. I mean, I think you get to a point when you get a little bit burned out, and then you know people always want to put it in your head, they want to whisper in your ear, well, Dustin, the band's not going to last forever. You know, it's you know, that's the way people always want to say, to you as a musician, oh, you can't do this forever. What are you going to do this when you're 50? Are you going to do this when you're 60? Did you look at that as kind of like a second career path, something that could, you could still find, a great outlet for yourself and something that you care about, but obviously something where you don't have to go on the road as much or at all?
I don't think I looked at it in like a real long-term sense like that.
Okay.
What I was most excited to do was there's a lot of really great musicians and bands that were already there that I felt like I had certain gifts that could help make some of the songwriting even stronger than it was. Like just having a bit more of a, I don't know, like I have a pretty critical eye for certain things, and so I thought a lot of it was amazing, and I just, with a few tweaks, could be even better, and I don't know, there was exciting stuff happening in music thing there, and ended up just being stuck in red tape most of the time I was there, so it was very, very unfulfilling.
Okay, a couple more questions here. This is from Neil Anglin, big listener, big fan. He says, this is a pretty personal question, but it's one I've always wanted to ask Dustin. How does he justify keeping his faith as a Christian, but also being so socially progressive? His songs are littered with references to the Bible, and he is a very, obviously very intelligent guy, but it's clear his faith isn't just a phase. He'd like to know because he's lost his faith a while back, and Dustin, you seem to have it all figured out.
Definitely don't have it all figured out. I think a lot of the issues around, well, okay. I think a lot of the issues with the way that a lot of the American evangelical church especially is kind of toxic to itself and to culture at large has to do with specific understandings of what the Bible is or should be. And so I in the past couple of years have been deconstructing and looking at a lot of that stuff, and I don't any longer believe that the Bible is inerrant, and that is a huge game changer in terms of a lot of different things, but I don't know if people are looking, but basically you can't ever get away from cognitive dissonance. I've also realized recently, but you can to an extent choose what your cognitive dissonance is. So I'd say if there are people who are Christians who are struggling with understanding how on earth they're supposed to interpret certain things the way they've been told to and still be loving to their neighbors and just a part of the society at large, I'd say check out some stuff from Peter Enns, E-N-N-S. The Bible Tells Me So is pretty concise and solid.
Okay.
Look at some of that. But yeah, I mean, I think I think I've been lucky enough to be able to interact with a bunch of different people as I've traveled, and that's counteracted kind of the flat world that a lot of the church or just really conservative circles will view things through. And so it's like, oh, well, here's my statement about this. And it's like, well, do you actually, like, homosexuality would be a good one. It's like, people having some kind of intellectual understanding of something without actually knowing a person who is homosexual, and those kind of encounters of just whatever, like just people who disagree with you or think different or live different or see the world differently, or that exposure is pretty priceless. And so I've been able to interact with all sorts of people and have loving relationships with them, and it's hopefully softened, you know, their view to some things and softened mine to others. And yeah, so I mean, I think that as much as you can be exposed to different things, either in person or really even through, I mean, I think good TV has been doing that really well lately. yeah. Maybe bringing those people into someone's home that they might not meet in the community they're in,
right.
And humanizing some of those issues. Yeah, so I don't know. I think you can argue all day long about a lot of things, but it comes down to loving people. So,
okay. Well, thanks for answering that question. I'm sure that will be great for you, Neil. Thank you for the question. And he also wants to know what you think of the brand new album. I know you guys have done some shows with them and stuff, so he's wondering what you think of it.
I think it's really good. I wish those guys would put records out more than every 10 years or whatever. It's great. My favorite song is the first track. I really, really like that guy. I think the whole record is rad. They're a fantastic band.
Yeah, they are. No, I know you guys have done a lot of stuff with them over the years and stuff, so it's... it's interesting. And the fact that they're calling their breakup day, I love that. that like 2 years before, they're like, nope, we're stopping in this year. How about that for branding a breakup?
Yeah, they're funny. I mean, they're the band that does everything, you know, the way you're not supposed to, and somehow it just makes them bigger and bigger.
Exactly. And, I've said that so many times.
More power to them. It doesn't... Anyone else who tried it wouldn't work, but like, no, we're not doing any areas. No one's like, you're the best. Okay, sweet.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Well, dude, thanks for taking the time. What's next for Thrice? I guess run it down. You guys are on tour right now, and the new record is hopefully coming out when?
Probably late summer. So we'll be trying to get tracking and... the beginning of the new year.
Great. Well, everyone looks forward to that, including myself. And thanks again, Dustin, for taking the time.
Cool. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care.
Peace.
Yep, see ya. So there it is, my conversation with Dustin. So good to have him. Thank you so much, Dustin, for doing this. Thanks to Natalie at BMG, their publicist, for setting up this thing. And yeah, man, it's an eye-opening conversation. So much there. I really wanted that to be informative for, you know, real Thrice fans, because I know the diehards are coming out of the woodwork. I'm sure some of you guys, it's the first time you've listened to this podcast, so I encourage you to go back and check out some other episodes. And the conversation we had about the brand new record was, well, that happened before all the, you know, allegations and stuff, but I decided to leave it in. I'm not going to cut out that just because of... you know, the current news and stuff. I'm not trying to promote brand new or anything like that. It's just something we talked about, you know, over a week ago. Anyways, I'm going to leave you with a Thrice tune. I always play music at the end of this podcast, and I'll say, man, this is a tough one. There's so many songs I could play from so many eras of the band. So many, just it was very, very hard to pick one. But I decided on a tune. And I liked the first two Thrice records. I wasn't, you know, a huge diehard fan. I'd heard them in passing. I thought they were a really cool band. But when Artist in the Ambulance came out, that was when I really took Thrice seriously. And the first track on that record, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, damn. This band is going for it. So here it is from the artist in the ambulance, the first track, Cold Cash and Colder Hearts on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See y'all next week. Don't forget to subscribe.
They are sick. They are broke.
Keep a calm.